You forgot to tell everyone what tonight's episode is about. Tonight's episode is just
Miss City AB.
We have a very, 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 very special guest tonight. I see him as an activist. I think that he uses a number of different art forms to teach and spread a message. So I have Miss City AB at the Noya on the show tonight.
What it do, what it do, what it do.
I'm so happy to have you. How you feeling?
Feeling good, Chad. Good.
Awesome, awesome. So like I told you, I'm so happy to have you on the show tonight. I really appreciate you being a part of Virtuous Optimist Podcast.
No problem.
This was really, really difficult for me to do. Like, for me to grab a few songs, just a few songs, like, that was so difficult for me because it's like everything you do is very unique to it to itself. Like how Kendrick Lamar, like every time you hear him on a feature or something, like you never really know what you're going to get, but you know you're about to get some fire.
I feel you.
So first of all, I want you to introduce yourself to the people and tell them, you know, about yourself. Give some background.
My name is Mid-City AB. That's my alias. Government name is Arnold. I just turned 26 years old. My birthday was in February, about a month ago, you know, from New Orleans, Louisiana, the boot way down south. But yeah, and I do a few things, mainly art, you know, in different forms, mixed media. You did.
West and south to the Florida Peach, Ruby Bridges to the desire. The people who thought that Jim Garrison was a liar. Silvestro Corolla, Silver Dollar Sam, Old Mattery, voting for the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke. Them racist bitches must have lost it. They reminisce on back when Harry Lee was still in office. Say that life was better when Marcello ran a town. You ain't had small babies out, you getting gunned down. Heavily black area, saturated requirement. White folk put their opinions on NOLA.com. Say they don't support Obama on that blame game shit, but I bet they wouldn't go in Holly Grove and say the same shit. Take all them stats to the ghetto instead of posting it.
It's really important that you are mindful of what you say in your music and all your art that you put out, because people really do listen to you. Like, people take heed to what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, I definitely be thinking of that a lot.
Your name is Mid-City AB. Of course, we can only assume that you grew up in Mid-City in New Orleans, right?
Yep, Mid-City, New Orleans. That's a neighborhood I was living in before Hurricane Katrina. And that's where I was at, you know, when the storm hit, you dig? And I don't live there anymore. I live further uptown now. That's my childhood right there. You know, the only reason I ain't living in Mid-City no more is because of the storm. So that's why, you know, for some reason, I just took that name, part of my artist name, you know?
Right, yeah. Keep it alive.
Mm-hmm.
There was a line in Asthma.
Ask my dad, what we gonna do now? He said, don't ask me, boy. Ask Allah, Wallah, right now.
Hey,
I'm a state trooper, sir. I'm tight.
They don't ask me.
Forgive me for my blessings. I guess I'm moving in the right direction.
I want to write a book this year. I want to drop a book.
I can dig
it. You know, I write articles. I do the rapidy rap stuff, like Fonte would say, bitty hoppity. I do a few different things, you know, because I got a lot of thoughts. If I kept them to myself, you know, I wouldn't really, you know, be making an impact. I can't tell you how many people, like, I just be walking up the street and they'll rush up to me telling me, oh, this song did this to them. This song got them through that. This thing I said in this song, you know, they never thought about it that way. And it's like, I'm really, you know, making a difference. I feel like just doing that, you know. I want to do more in the future. For right now, I just want to, you know, I want to mess with people's heads, you know.
This country wasn't made for you, and it wasn't made for me. On the real is why I teach, on the real is why I preach. Might as well stay in the kitchen on the real, cause I'ma eat. Every day a brother murk another brother, man. It wasn't like this when we was in the motherland. It'll be your own people pull a gun, that's true. But your people ain't the ones who made the gun, no fool. See, your people ain't the ones who made liquor and pills, or made fast food in corner stores, that's on the real.
When I'm listening to your music, like, I'm like, man, this brother is so intelligent.
Why you like your beats so mellow? In my tracks like, hey, you ain't gotta meet this fella. Wearing 165, 5'9 like Royce. They wanna know the mind that's behind my voice. Just to let you know, I ain't playing around. I ain't trying to be somebody just laying around. My thing that people are asking me is what's going on in the world today.
When I first was listening to your music, I was like, man, I gotta meet this dude. Like, I gotta meet him. Like, I gotta meet him. First song that I ever heard by you, it was King Heron.
Okay.
Instantly related.
To my mama, even when I ain't got it. You know that. I give it to my mama even when I ain't got it. La, I give it to my mama even when I ain't got it. Cause when I was little, she found a way to get it poppin'. Back before Laka wasn't fucking with me. Taking gifted classes, eating government cheese. Wearing Payless shoes, but she made them feel special. It was paradise, but to some it was a ghetto. Had childhood friends.
Beating, like, I know what melody I want to use, but then I gotta come up with words to, you know, like that. So for some reason, that's what popped up in my head, like the chorus.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
I grew up on that, you know. See, us black people, you got so much stuff in your mind, so much stuff your parents exposed you to, like your aunties put you on, your cousins, and it's all in there. And it's like, when you a creative person, you're gonna come out, and then somebody else gonna see it, be like, oh, this where you got that from? You like, damn, I forgot that, you know. But
exactly.
It's in there, though. It had that impact on you, like real talk.
And hey.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Sounded good, Daddy.
Yeah, you're right.
That was fantastic.
Ready to move on?
Now, give me a minute. Be right back. You want to turn that camera off, baby? He's happy?
Didn't that sound the same as when we cut New York?
I hate to disagree with your ass, but I'm with your paw on that shit.
You know, New Orleans infect music. It reconstitutionalizes it. I'm not trying to be no jive nicety sucker, but I'll tell you what. It matters a difference. Can you dig it?
Brothers and sisters! Brothers and sisters!
Tell y'all a story.
I don't know what this world is coming
to. I'm Miss LaDue, right?
Letter to New Orleans, that's what I was writing while I was at Lafayette, you know. That was like my junior year, I want to say. You know, and it was like I was just viewing all the stuff that was happening in the city from 2 hours away. So it was like, you know, might have just write a letter back home to all the people that's still on there, you know, telling them what I, you know, my views on what's going on down there, basically.
What you put in, it sound hard to handle. But if you sell drugs on an empty block for 5 minutes, what you gon' get back, Nathaniel? Same with this school shit. He told me that was bullshit. Put them on game and think you selling them dreams, but they'll ask you to buy a car if they under 18.
That's like one of the tapes that people, you know me from.
Yeah, that's a classic. That's one of them tapes to where like people gonna like go back and be like, damn. The beats on there.
A lot of them beats on there was produced by my dude M80, the music man. The majority of them are. Matter of fact, I had a few other producers on there. I think Levi, Clef, OG Juan. But M80, he really, like, I'd say he constructed the whole sound I was going for that tape, you know. Like, because okay. The first song I did on there was Tulane and Bruh. Once he sent me that beat, I was like, yeah, this guy, I want the whole tape to sound. And I constructed it, you know, around that, basically.
That's a gift from God, dog. Everything I do is about God. I ain't playing no games with them people. I'm real, my nigga. I'm 100% OG real. God is so good, guess what? All y'all blessed. I respect and love all y'all. You know why? Because y'all in the...
Man, I love it. I love it. That Tulane and Broad skit.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole song, I feel like it wouldn't even sound the same without that skit at the beginning.
Nah, not even.
Mm-hmm. When I first started spitting, that was like one of the main things I would do with my stuff. It's like, I watched like a bunch of obscure movies or like TV shows. So I'd just be, you know, ripping, you know, different parts of, you know, the movies or the TV shows and putting them in there. And it's like, you know, like a lot of other rappers, they do the same stuff. They put Paid in Full skits on.
Right, right, yeah.
Friday, you know, something like that, you know, and it's like, how would you put that on? Like, you know, we've heard this 100 times. So what I wanted to do is, I wanted to put some stuff on that would add to my song. Either at the beginning, giving it an introduction for what I'm about to talk about, or at the end, you know, basically putting the cherry on top. So
right.
I had people running up to me like, yo, what movie is this from? Or, you know, what TV show this is?
Yeah.
Or, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, I take pride in that.
As I was like looking at your videos and stuff, I learned that Tulane and Broad, that's the intersection of a prison in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that prison, the main prison, Parish Prison in New Orleans. And I grew up like 2 blocks from there, right in mid-city.
Dang, so what was that like?
You know, when you're growing up, you think everything normal. You think everybody grew up across the street from a jail.
Right.
As I got older, it was like, wow. I really grew up
right
down the street from a prison, you know, and it's like, when you think about the fact that New Orleans, we number one in Louisiana for incarceration, and Louisiana mm-hmm. is number one in the nation for incarceration, and the
right.
U.S. is number one in the world for incarceration. I basically grew up across the street from the prison capital of the world,
right.
Whatever, however you want to configure it, but yeah, so like, the depth of it hit me later as I got older.
It's really cool to hear people's perspectives and their journeys. Other people's journeys is completely different from yours. And it's like, wow, like, really? That was your journey?
That's what make it all beautiful.
Exactly, exactly. In the place where you're born, you know, that affects, you know, you. So I wanna talk about New Orleans being your origin. For instance, how I call you an activist. You know, so that side of you, I can recall when we hung out that time, I asked you, you know, have you always been into Black history and kind of pro-Black and like stepping on people's necks and shit behind this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how does New Orleans being a place where you're from affect that aspect of you?
I really started with like New Orleans history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Black, so of course, you know, one of my main focuses was Black history within New Orleans.
Okay.
Studying that, I kept seeing like connections to everything else outside of Louisiana. You know, like if you want to talk about jazz history, you know, you see how, you know, New Orleans had that main effect on jazz. And then you tie it into like the Great Migration with all these Black people leaving the South. And that's basically how jazz left New Orleans and left Louisiana, went to Chicago and New York with the Great Migration, you know. And then you think about what the Great Migration was. That was, you know, ex-slaves and the children of slaves leaving from the South, looking for jobs in the North, you know. Then you tie all them different things together, and it's just, you know, you see the connections. So that's what it was, you know. I just kept seeing patterns and connections, and I'm obsessed with that, you know.
Right. I could tell. Like, I mean, every single song is not a song that you don't, you know, talk about, you know, Black history and how we as Black people are miseducated and conditioned. And so you can tell that you're completely passionate about it. When did you realize that this was something that you were truly passionate about because you were just so intrigued by it? When was this?
I still remember, like, when, because I was always studying it. I still was like, you know, I still was on some, oh, this is our fault. You can't be blaming it on other people. I was still on that. But I remember the very first time where I started to, like, shift. I had the flu. This was, like, early 2015. I had the flu for, like, a week. And for some reason, you know, when you are bedridden, you got a lot of time to think. And so I just kept watching documentaries. For some reason, I was listening to, like, Malcolm X speeches and Stokely Carmichael.
Can you name me one Black man today who's killed anybody white and is still alive? Even after rebellion, when some Black brothers throw some bricks and bottles, 10,000 of has to pay the crime. Because when the white policeman comes in, anybody who's Black is arrested, because we all look alike. So that we have to raise those questions. We, the youth of this country, must begin to raise those questions. And we must begin to move to build new institutions that's going to speak to the needs of people who need it.
James Baldwin, you know, just because I couldn't move, didn't leave a bed. So I'm listening to all that, and I'm like, you know what, he right. You know what, she right, you know, if I was listening, you know, female speaker, and it was like, you know what, yeah. And it was like, I guess me being so sick, tossing my, you know, my life away, and wishing I could just get better, I think that experience along with listening, you know, to these different freedom fighters and whatnot, I think a connection was with it. It felt like I was in purgatory or something.
Wow.
For real, I was sick as hell. Couldn't sleep. Like, you know how it is when you really, really sick. You know, and I'd be up like 3 a.m, sweating like a dog, you know, bad fever, headache, and, you know, growing up. And I'm just listening to Malcolm X, and it's like something about it, you know. It just really left a mark on me.
So when did Letter to New Orleans, when was that released?
Before that.
But I would think that you were, like, really, really deep into it at that point.
I mean, I was deep. It's like, all right, you could be reading a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell you everything that happened in the book.
Right.
But then after I read that book and I go and I keep living life and then I experience something that I read in that book, it's like I got a whole different understanding of the book at that point.
Right.
So that, like, a lot of stuff was happening in my life around that time, too. And, you know, like, once Trayvon got killed and Michael Brown and, you know, all that stuff started to happen, you know, it really created, like, this shift. A lot of people who were basically, you know, sleep, for lack of a better word, before.
Yeah.
That stuff just, like, made you, like, no, you gotta wake up, you know. Once
right.
all that stuff, you know, Mr. Sterling, you know, rest in peace, once all that stuff started happening, it was like, people had to, like, you know, all right, what if these people ain't lying? What if, you know, these different people who I thought was crazy at first was just complaining too much? What if they telling the truth, telling the truth, telling the truth?
And now suckers wanna box with me. Walking up the street, ollie ollie oxen free. Since we got free, acting like we own bubble. In actuality, they just made us free to struggle. You and I, T-Y, disconnected and I see why. Stay sleepless, brother, cause it's better on that side. Stay indoors, it's a war going on outside. And everybody ain't built for this. I understand, you too scared of getting killed for this. You'd rather get killed over pride or drugs, but you ain't trying to die over love.
Peace type of person, so I don't necessarily, I wouldn't say that I'm pro-black, but it's like, I appreciate people like you that share those experiences and share those stories and share that wisdom and share that knowledge, because I wouldn't necessarily go
and believe it or not, that's how I started, you know.
Yeah.
I was on some real, just, you know, if you like, really look into my past, like when I first started all this, like rapping and stuff way, way back in the gap, I was exactly like that. You know, I was on some real, you know, just like, you know, super peace stuff, like just, you know, humans. I felt like a lot of stuff was just a distraction. I felt
yeah.
like a police uniform was a distraction. I felt like, you know, skin color was a distraction. And I felt like it was deeper than that. I felt like it was science and it was, you know, humanity. And I felt like a lot of this stuff was inevitable, but humans were accepting it as inevitable when we weren't supposed to. And it was just deep. Like that, but I mm-hmm. felt like I had to go through that phase and then go to, you know, where I'm at right now. I couldn't start, because a lot of people who start where I'm at, you know, with the, you know, pro-black stuff, I don't believe.
Right.
There's not something about it is missing. It's not humane, you know. A lot of them people, like when they talk, they don't even sound, you know, like I just don't believe them. So I feel like you really have to, like, really have empathy for people first, and then you can
right.
get into the other stuff.
You say empathy, I mean, you know, that's, I practice that on a daily. And I remember our very first conversation, you were like, we just gotta empathize with people pretty much.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's true, you know, it's true. It's like, put yourself in that person's shoes. Like, put yourself, like, try to feel for that person, you know, like deeply. And it's like a gift and a curse to be able to do that.
True. Yeah, it's a sacrifice, I feel like. Yeah, you really got to learn that first, because a lot of people, they want to teach, but they can't teach, you know.
Yeah.
You got to work on yourself before you try to work on other people.
Right.
I did some real, you know, tuning up and, you know, some soul stuff. I had to, you know, introspect and dive deep in myself for years before
yeah.
I even got to, you know, even thinking the way I think right now.
Right.
Yeah, you don't
yeah.
let nobody rush you or push you into thinking a certain way. I already know. I'm just saying, I'm talking to the audience. I already know you got that.
For sure, share. And that goes for me, too. I'm not exempt from that.
I'd rather deal with somebody who, you know, on some, oh, I never thought it that way type stuff than somebody on, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's always good to have a person that's going to say, I don't understand that. Tell me what that means.
Exactly. That's how you learn.
Yeah, you know, and it's so many, like, names that you throw out, like David Duke and all that. Like, I didn't know who none of them people, like, I'm like, even Christopher Columbus. Like, the only reason I know he stole America was because you said it.
Word? Man, that's
yes.
crazy. Dang, dog.
Yes, I'm telling you, it's buku stuff that I learned from you, and I only know it because you said it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like listening to what you're saying and then going and looking up these names that you're throwing out there and what these certain places is and all kinds of stuff. Like, that's why I'm telling you, you have to be very mindful of what you say because people are listening to you. And for somebody like me to take heed to what somebody's saying, you know, that's something, because I ain't listening to everybody.
You're supposed to be like that, though. You gotta tune out the fuckery sometimes, you know?
For sure, for sure. Let's jump back, because you mentioned jazz, and you know what I did? You know what I did? Mm-hmm. I went back and listened to my episode, Just Jazz, because I was like, me and A.V. finna running on the podcast. Like,
Let's get it.
We finna running about jazz, man. That's what it's all about, man. Influence.
When you come right down to it, the man who started the big noise in jazz was Buddy Bolden.
This is Jazz Talk. Let's jump into Jazz Talk. What we actually going to do, we're going to talk about your articles, your essays that you did in the month of February. So let's talk about Black Music and Our Reluctance to Claim It essay. Tell the people what that essay is about.
All right, Black Music and Our Reluctance to Claim It. I just, you know, I noticed these patterns, like I said, from ragtime and jazz all the way up to hip-hop right now. I just noticed this thing, this, like, self-deprecating thing with Black people where we feel like we have to erase our importance to something or our contribution to something to make other people more happy.
Right.
Sometimes it'll be that, or it'll be, you know, other people making such a fuss that they created something, and we'll just say, okay, you can have it. We'll go and create another whole art form, you know?
Right.
And so that's basically what it was. I was just going through the history of that, you know?
Okay. And so I wrote down a few things that I wanted to discuss, you know, taking it back to, like, ragtime and jazz and all that. As far as, because you mentioned in that essay, rap pioneers, you know, like, forgetting about the rap, you know, the people that pioneered what you did today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So who would you say, who would you consider some rap pioneers?
The ones from the beginning. They say the first rap song was Sugar Hill Gang, you know, Rapper's Delight, but, you know, rap existed way before that, you know, into the 70s. They got some theories that say it existed in the early 70s, like 73. Then they got some people say, hold on. Rap been going on. Started in Louisiana at Congo Square. And I'd be like, wow.
Rap was in
Africa. We've been doing this. And so, you know, it just go back and back and back and back and back and forth. But rap pioneers, I say, most important, like, you know, the early Cold Crush brothers, you know. Everybody, listen to this. The weekend's coming, so don't you dare miss. You're gonna regret it if you're not on the scene. And then you get so mad, it'll make you scream. Everyone, give us your attention, please. Especially those of you who like parties. It's a message that we would like to extend. About where everybody love the right weekend. We live in time to work and a time to play. I bet you can't live more effectively in one day. To win, I'm delayed without further ado. Let the fall run down this week for you. We're the Cold Crush Four, giving you more. And we just came to say, ooh, ah, what a relief it is. So when the weekend comes your way, so grab a chair from anywhere and listen while we speak. Cause the Four's gonna start this record off with the first day of the week, Monday. The train was late and you hardly ate. Plus you wish you stayed in bed Tuesday.
started and showboat 30.
Now your mind's a doubt, you can't figure out or why you're not gonna get promoted.
Friday after work, you do your sleep for a few until you hear somebody say, hey,
wake up, now don't you know?
You know, all them early people, man.
Would you say people like Gil Scott Heron, you would say that he's a rap pioneer?
He inspired a lot of the early rappers, you know, especially, you know, the people who really had a message in their songs. I want to say the message, that song, that video, for some reason they're not coming to mind. The name, the people who made Don't Push Me.
Cause I'm close to the edge.
Grandmaster Flash, man. Grandmaster,
yes.
Nefarious Five, like them, the rap pioneers. Mm-hmm. That was probably the first conscious rap song, arguably.
Yeah.
If that song wouldn't have came out, I feel like rap would have went a totally different route.
Right.
You know what I mean? From what hip hop, the hippie to the hippie, the hippie.
Yeah.
That was just part of music, and that's
right.
Why a lot of people thought rap wasn't really gonna do nothing. They thought it was gonna be a fad because they thought it was just, you know, like disco for partying and snorting cocaine and stuff. But when
right.
they did that song, I feel like they really showed what rap could be.
Exactly.
It was a foreshadow of what rap was growing to, you know, the possibilities,
right.
You know. So yeah,
yeah,
people like that.
An episode that I want to do for this season is just hip-hop. So I pretty much want to take it back to the beginning of hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
And include, like, the Gil Scotts and like, the P-Funks. You know, they were influences of that as well. You know, like, Gang Starr's Guru, you know, and how it's all intertwined with jazz and all that. Like, I want to do a podcast like that. So I gotta get my hip-hop research up. So I'll be hitting you up and, like, share this with me.
Yeah, I could, you know, point you the direction and whatnot.
I wanted to talk about, because I mentioned this in the episode Just Jazz, when, you know, people were thinking that the original Dixieland jazz bands were the people who created it. And I don't know if you listened to the Just Jazz episode, but I was like, they was the first ones to record it. They wasn't the, you know, they didn't create it. So, but
let me mess your head about that, though. Let me mess your head about that.
Yeah.
This man I know by the name of James Carse, he does a lot of research on early jazz history in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And he found out that musicians in New Orleans were already recording music before that. Like, recording
really?
Music on the, yeah, but the thing was, they weren't doing it for commercial usage. They would do it. They would record it on the wax cylinder or whatnot, and they'd play it for all the people in the neighborhood, and they'd get a kick out of it, and they'd just throw it in the shed, and then it would get ruined by the rain. So, like, probably dozens of, from the late 1800s to before the original Dixieland jazz band recorded that in 1917, probably had like a dozen jazz recordings by New Orleans artists.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I just learned that.
Dope. That's a great fact. And to even, like, piggyback off of that, it's like Buddy Bolden. Like, you can't find any of his music. I've never. Have you found any of his music?
Nah, he don't. He they said he recorded stuff, but it must have got destroyed and whatnot.
Dang.
I think that's the mystique around him, though, is that there is no music for you to hear of him. You know, but everybody says he was official.
Take it away. I thought I heard him say, I thought I heard Buddy Bolden shout, open up that window and let that bad air out.
So let's talk about Congo Square and you know, I've learned about Storyville and the Red Light District. Like, tell me about all that.
Congo Square, that was a place where I think it started in like the 1820s.
Mm-hmm.
In New Orleans, they would let, you know, all the slaves gather on Sundays. And, you know, they would dance and they would trade and they would sell stuff to each other, sell clothes and basically politic and socialize, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the only place in America at the time where slaves were allowed to, you know, openly congregate and, you know, make music and dance with one another. And like a lot of the different songs and, you know, hymns and, you know, rhythms that existed in Congo Square on those Sundays, they ended up influencing creation of jazz later on. A man by the name of Louis Gottschalk, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Okay.
He would go to Congo Square during his childhood, and he would hear all those different, you know, songs sung by the slaves and the Creoles and whatnot, and he became a, you know, world-class composer. inspiration he got from those early, you know, songs he heard in Congo Square to create compositions, which ended up influencing people like Jelly Roll Morton and, you know, all these different other Creole piano players who created jazz.
Lewis, so he was like a major forefather. Like, he really paved the way.
Yeah, he was one of the main people. It's crazy because a lot of, in Louisiana, a lot of Creole children were classically trained on piano and different instruments.
Oh.
Yeah, like black people were really, at a certain point before the Civil War, black people in New Orleans were more literate than the white people.
Wow.
There's an article I read about that. Yeah, like we were better readers, better mathematicians and everything than the white, you know, the white people in the city. So yeah, it's like there was a lot of people like that, like Louis Gottschalk, I'm probably messing over his name. But there were a lot of people like that, you know, who ended up influencing jazz.
What's the connection between Storyville and Congo Square? Was it within Congo Square? Like,
that's the crazy part. All right. Congo Square, right? That was actually at first in the early days of New Orleans, like colonial New Orleans. That was right outside of the city.
Okay.
And at the time of Storyville was 1897 to 1917. That was basically this neighborhood in New Orleans where prostitution was legal, technically, you know.
Yeah.
And it was named after, I forget the man's first name, but his last name was Story. You know, he was on the city council, I believe. And so the people just made fun of him and called it Storyville. He hated that. But yeah, that's what they called it.
Got it.
That was actually down the street from Congo Square. Like two blocks.
Okay.
And right now, the area where Congo Square is and the old Storyville, that's actually a project. It's a housing project now. So it's only like one building still up from old Storyville.
Dang.
Mm-hmm. Crazy, man.
Yes. I mean, and I know, like, you're from there and you live there, but it's like, it took me to move away to appreciate it.
Me too. Like, I ain't really start to, like, really rab on to that stuff until I was just 2 hours away in Lafayette, you know. I was still in New Orleans, I read about stuff like that. But for some reason, you don't really appreciate certain stuff until you just a little, either far away or just a little bit removed from it. You heard me?
Exactly.
So that's how it is.
So I'm like, man, I can't wait to get a chance to, like, go out there and just, like, experience the culture. So I used to hate New Orleans. I used to hate New Orleans because I was like, it's so many people and it's a lot going on. And I'm like, so I really didn't care for that type of environment.
The French Quarter, though, that ain't the real New Orleans. That's like the touristy, you know, urban street, all that.
Right, yeah, you're right. But yeah, I'm trying to hit it up and go to some shows and stuff. I got to do that, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell the people about your education, what you went to school for, what your background is as far as, like, education. And that is all for tonight. Tune in next Thursday, same time, for part 2 of Virtuous Optimist Podcast, episode 9, Just Mid-City AB. So next week, we'll be talking Disturbing Noir 1, 2, and the EP, which is projects from Mid-City AB. We'll be talking about the Mississippi Revolution, which is a joint project with AB and Gene Stanza. We'll be talking videos. We'll be talking about who's he inspiring. Oh, and just know we talking about them hip-hop influences. We'll be talking about why he's so aggressive. You know, that we digging deeper next week, so you got to come and kick it with your soul sister and your soul brother. I'm telling you. Thank you for listening to Virtuous Optimist Podcast tonight. I really appreciate you being a part of what I have to offer to the world. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for this gift, this platform. All praise to the Most High. Check out the link in our bio. We have a Kickstarter going on right now. Our goal, VO's goal, is $2,500. We are at about $504. Sow a seed into Virtuous Optimist Podcast. Till we meet again next Thursday with your soul sister. I'm out.
Peace.